Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Janice Orr. My bar number is 40034. I'm representing Gadeco LLC and the other entity defendants or appellants in this case. The case presented to you here is not one of great complex legal nature. There are two issues before the court. One is a question of the appropriate interest rate and attorney's fees, and the other is whether a jury was improperly denied.
Excuse me, friend.
No problem.
It occurs to me that neither party in this case objects to being treated as merchants for purposes of the Uniform Commercial Code. You both cite to the UCC. And, I mean, am I assuming correctly?
That's correct, sir. The facts are not really at issue here. The only questions are the two that I just noted. I would like to address first the question of the interest rate and attorney's fees. The cases on this matter are not plentiful, but I think are cited by both sides. We have the often case Winers Pumping, Surplus Electric, and Murray Equipment are the primary cases. All of those cases look to the facts of the case and basically approach the issue in a very similar way, with the facts being the deciding factor. In this case, the trial court, while I believe did a very nice job during the trial, I believe misstated the facts as it applies to this issue. The issue here comes from, there was one, there were actually two invoices issued, and only two. One was paid just prior to, or shortly before the trial in this case, which was the $92,500. That was one invoice that was paid. There was no interest or attorney's fees collected on that, nor was the issue raised by Appley. The second is the one that we went to trial on, and in that instance, there was a $60,000 payment made prior to the trial, and there was no interest assessed on that and no attorney's fees for that portion. Now, the attorney's fees becomes a little difficult when you're assessing, but, so we could kind of leave that one alone. But this distinguishes the case from some of the cases that came out on the side of having the higher interest rate, which is included in the invoice in small print. There's no question about that. There is in the invoice the fact that the 18% interest would be charged and that there would be attorney's fees. The court seemed to turn on the conduct of the parties. And given the fact that in this case, the conduct of the parties was that there was no interest charged and no attorney's fees on the one case, and the other one, the judge just decided that they would be. And it was a very brief statement in his conclusions.
Sorry, no, I'm sorry, Judge, go ahead.
You're not suggesting that the interest term materially altered the terms of the parties?
No, I believe the findings of fact said that the parties had not agreed on an interest rate. So the fact that there would be some interest, we're not disputing that there would be a statutory interest. The question is whether the 18% interest was agreed upon as a part of the original agreement. And I believe that the findings of the court was that was not the case.
You agree, Ms. Orr, I think, that this case comes down, was there not evidence of a course of performance, right, or a course of dealing? Could you, and I understand the distinction you're making, particularly on Murray Equipment, which I'll ask your colleague about. I mean, 50 invoices of history is different than two. I get that. How do you just, you mentioned yourself the Offen case and the Weiner's pumping case. I'm curious how you distinguish those. I mean, Offen, I don't think there was any issue where someone did or did not pay interest. As I recall, Offen, there were these delivery tickets that were came after the products or whatever was delivered that had the same kind of 18% interest. And the court said, good enough, course of performance, course of dealing. Those facts seem pretty similar to this one. Likewise, and I'll throw out Weiner's and then I'll let you address both of them. In Weiner's, as I remember it, there was an issue where the defendant there had in fact paid late and no one pursued the interest. And the court in that case said, I'm not going to assume a course of performance or dealing. You didn't pursue the interest when you had the chance. That's different than this case. So how do those cases help your argument here?
In the Offen case, and I believe that Appelli's argument is that that is the case which should control here. I believe that the difference is that the court found that the interest and the attorney's fees were accepted as written confirmations because they were signed by an agent in the field who had the authority to do so. It was the president's son. In this case, I believe the findings of the court and the evidence at trial showed that the person signing in the field had nothing to do with whether or not interest rates were right or attorney's fees were correct, or they were just signing as a matter of fact the work was done.
Although I think you're correct. At least one of these tickets, as I recall from Offen, was signed by the president's son, but I think one was signed by a shop foreman and one by a truck driver. I think there are more than one. I mean, how do you respond to that?
In this case, it was made clear with the evidence that that Dawn had made no effort to make sure that those were ever received by the company, and I think that makes a major difference. There's also the fact that the tickets were not presented as an additional part of the contract. It was like a work in the field, in oil and gas cases, they are presented to the person in charge of the well as the work has been done. And that is the reason they were signed. And that was the testimony that was presented at this trial. Insofar as Weiner, that is, I believe, distinguishable because it says that there was no previous amount owed at any time, so that the issue had just never come up. That is in case not the fact here. There was money owed. There were two invoices, and as I said, the first had been paid prior to the trial. That was therefore not a part of the trial, but no interest was paid on that, and there were no attorney's fees charged on that. And in addition, the $60,000 that had been paid prior to the trial on the invoice that did go, that was at issue at the trial, there was no interest charged on that. So I think that those cases, are clearly distinguishable from this one here. Just briefly, if I may, because I would like to reserve a little time, question on the jury issue, I am not disputing the fact that the case law says that equity cases, you do not have a right to a trial by jury. There's no point in arguing that. I think that the difference which should be made is that a breach of contract case, you have a right to a jury. Simply throwing in a lien, which makes it an equity case, I think that there should be some inquiry into the fact of whether or not that is really a viable issue. For instance, in this case, as I argued in the briefs, that was never pursued. It was never intended to be pursued. They had no desire to own a gas well. That was not the point of the case. The point was to get the money, which is certainly understandable.
Pardon me for...
Certainly.
The judgment here, actual court order.
Correct.
And the original case is... The... What does that refer to as far as you're concerned?
The original case was filed in Denver by the Grinberg entities.
That's my question. Why is it the original case?
Doesn't the phrase original case refer to the first case
filed in that jurisdiction?
That may be.
I mean, simply because there was a race to the courthouse.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean necessarily that the breach of contract case was the original case here, does it?
No, that's correct. However, that was the case that was the original case, if you want to take the Dawn Trucking case as the original case, is also a breach of contract case and a foreclosure action.
But the addendum clause seeks to foreclose.
Yes.
That's the way, that's the security used to try.
Correct. But my point is that I believe that some inquiry should be made as to whether or not that is something that is actually legitimately being pursued or is just a way to get it into an equitable standing.
Ms. Orr, and I know you want to save time. I'll
That's
be
okay.
brief. I may have be misunderstanding your argument. What are you claiming the right to a jury trial on? I guess I thought it was the Grinberg entities' claims, which, you know, surely were a breach of contract and only breach of contract. Are you now saying that the error was that the court didn't give you a jury trial on Dawn Trucking's claim, or is it both? Or
on Dawn Trucking's breach of contract claim.
All right, so you're not claiming you had a right to a jury on your own claim at this point?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you, and I reserve the rest of my time.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Annie Murphy, and my registration number is 38719, and I represent Dawn Trucking in this matter. There are two issues in this case. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the jury trial issue. That's well-settled law. This was a lien case. Every lien case is also a breach of contract action. The lien foreclosure is a tool of collection, and we did have an order of foreclosure in this matter. The second issue is whether the trial court's determination that the Grinberg entities pay the higher rate of interest, the 18% interest, on the judgment as specified in Dawn Trucking's invoice and the reasonable attorney's fees clause is factually supported by the record. And first, I just wanted to go over the facts that in the record that do support the trial court's conclusion. First, there was a credit agreement, which was signed by the Grinberg entities. In the credit agreement, it states that interest fees may be assessed on unpaid invoices, unpaid accounts.
It doesn't indicate an amount. That could mean statutory interest.
It does not indicate an amount. No, and that's where we go to the course of performance.
I know you're going to that. I'd be very interested in hearing about the evidence of course of dealing here, because I'll be candid, it's pretty thin.
Well, Your Honor, I do want to point out that in the Grinberg entity's reply brief, they do state that they do not disagree with the facts as presented in Dawn Trucking's answer brief. And in the facts as I presented them in the brief, I think it's important to note that there were more than two invoices on this account. The credit agreement, which was signed by Grinberg entities, was signed in May of 2008. When this action was commenced, there were two unpaid invoices. Those invoices were for work that was performed in November and December of 2008. Between May of 2008, well, really June of 2008, because the credit agreement was signed on May 30th of 2008, and November, there were odd jobs that were performed by Dawn Trucking at the request of Grindberg entities. That work was billed and invoiced, and the bills were timely paid. And
how many invoices, do you have any idea? I mean, how many jobs were, how many invoices were sent with this?
There were at least three. Those invoices were not part of the record at trial. There was testimony at trial by Jack Percival, who was the manager of the Rock Springs office from Dawn Trucking. This is in the record at 1975. And he stated, "We did odd jobs for Grindberg entities. Everything was fine. We did the work. They paid their bills, and there was no problem."
There's no showing that those other three bills or several bills that are not in the record had the same language as the ones that are in the record, is there?
No, they did. All of the invoices were on the same pre-printed form. There are two invoices on the record that show this language, and those were exhibits 2 and 7.
Right, but there was no testimony that said, "Oh, we had three other invoices and they had the exact same language."
Right.
So how do we get then from two invoices to course of performance or course of dealing, which I think is what you're doing? It's quite different than Murray Equipment, where there were 50.
Well, there's actually additional evidence on the record which supports the course of dealing that in Murray they didn't even have, like the credit agreement. They didn't have that in Murray, and the credit agreement was what established the party's relationship. The trial court found that.
But isn't the credit agreement perfectly consistent with the Grindberg entity's argument that statutory interest?
It's consistent in that the credit agreement does state that interest may be assessed. It does not state the rate of interest. The other evidence that's on the record is, well, like I said, previous work was billed and paid. Also, that an employee signed off on the invoice. That evidence is on the record, and partial payment was actually made on the invoice in question. So that's evidence in the record that Grindberg entities saw the invoice. They partially paid that timely on account and never made an objection as to that language contained on the invoice.
That said, now why does one prior invoice and this one create a course of conduct? Why does two instances create a course of conduct?
There's more than just
there's more than two instances where 1.5% is specifically identified as the per month as specifically identified as the applicable rate of interest.
There are no more than those two invoices in the record.
Okay.
There's a testimony that states that prior invoices were billed and were paid timely.
But there's no testimony that says prior invoices of the exact language or containing this 1.5% interest rate.
Yes.
I take it your point is that regardless of the language, there is a established course of dealing between the versions.
That's right, and I'll go into that.
Based upon that, there's no objection to this invoice.
Right, there was no objection. Even in the complaint that Grindberg entities filed, that's the record at one in Denver County, although they objected as to the reasonableness of the costs, they never objected as to the provisions of the interest fees and attorney's fees in their complaint against Dawn Trucking. Under the UCC, a course of dealing is a sequence of conduct concerning previous transactions to the parties to a particular transaction that establishes a common basis of understanding for interpreting their expressions and other conduct. And under subsection D, a course of dealing may supplement or qualify the terms of the agreement. In this case, a course of dealing exists because the trial court found that the agreement between Dawn Trucking and Grindberg entities with respect to the transaction involved prior repeated occasions for performance by Dawn Trucking and Grindberg entities with knowledge of the nature of the performance and the opportunity for objection to it accepted the performance or acquiesced in it without objection. So first, again, the agreement between Dawn and Grindberg entities with respect to the transaction involves repeated occasions for performance by Dawn Trucking. That was the entire purpose of the credit agreement. It was to establish a relationship between the parties whereby work could be ordered by Grindberg entities and Dawn Trucking would perform it. There's testimony on the record that explains the credit agreement. Soren Nielsen, who is a manager of Dawn Trucking, testified that for all new customers, they are required to fill out a credit application so that Dawn Trucking can do a background check on them and then they can do work that's ordered. Second, Grindberg entities ordered previous work by Dawn Trucking. As I stated, Dawn Trucking performed the work, invoiced them. They got paid on time for that work, and there was never an objection.
Can I go back on that point on sure. The objection? And I may need to be refreshed on the facts, and I apologize. When were the invoices delivered? Was the work already done, and then invoice is delivered and signed off on?
That's how it works. So for the big invoice in question, in this case, it was invoiced on December 31st, 2008. So the invoice was due to be paid in 30 days, so it was due January 30th of 2009. Dawn Trucking received partial payment on January 23rd, 2009. So on time, they received a partial payment. When Dawn Trucking realized that they were not going to get paid for the balance, they pretty much immediately filed a lien. They hired counsel and filed a lien. And that's their practice. They don't rebill and add interest.
And did they make a claim for interest right about that point when they're filing their lien? When was the first time Dawn Trucking raised an issue of
in their lien?
Okay. And at that point, did the Grindberg entities immediately object?
Well, so they filed their lien in February of 2009, and the second week of March 2009 is when Grindberg entities filed their complaint in Denver County against Dawn Trucking for breach of contract, although no damages or other relief was sought.
And remind me, did they take issue with the interest rate in their complaint?
No, they did not take any. They did not complain about the interest rate or attorney's fee provision.
I guess where my questions are leading here, you've said a couple of times, and the UCC does say if you don't object seasonably in a deal between merchants, it's accepted.
Right.
I guess my question is, when should they have objected? They got the invoice after the work was done. I'm trying to figure out the point at which they were supposed to object.
Well, in their complaint, they should have objected, and whenever they at the first time that they saw that language on the invoice, they could have called and said, we're not going to agree to if this is a term of our account, our open account, we're not going to pay this additional interest or attorney's fees for collection. At that point, then Dawn Trucking could have said, well, we're not going to do work for you then. So
they already did the work. I guess that was why I was asking the question.
Right, but in all the cases that have been cited to the court in the briefs, that's how these companies perform on these open accounts. That's the purpose of the credit agreement, to establish this relationship, and then the party does, orders the work, the other party does the work, and then when they're finished with the work, they invoice.
You do the work in advance, you don't get paid, but you have a lien to rely on.
Right. Yep. And then I just wanted to go over the other part of the UCC that I cited, and that's also cited in the Often case. Let me just find it here. And that's that comment 5 of section 207 of Article 2 of the UCC, which states that an interest provision in an invoice is an example of a clause which involves no element of unreasonable surprise. And this court in the Often case stated that the concept implicit in this statement applies to both the interest and attorney's fees provision included on the invoice. So, and I think both parties agree in their briefs that those are to be, the law is to be applied to the interest and attorney's fees provision together. They're not separate issues. So, unless there are any further questions, thank you.
Well, you have a
thank you very much. I will be very brief. I think that Ms. Murphy aptly stated that the credit agreement sets forth the agreement of the parties. And as pointed out by Judge Gabriel, that agreement says nothing. As it says that interest may be charged and attorney's fees may be collected. It's not that they will be. There's no percentage. There's no nothing like that in there. So I think that weighs also on the side of the course of conduct or lack thereof in this case that would preclude the higher interest rate. As I think I have made clear, we're not suggesting that the statutory interest rate would not apply. That certainly would apply, but that just the higher interest rate would not. And we are in agreement with Ms. Murphy that the attorney's fees provision, I believe the trial court also had them lumped together.
Ms. Orr, I can ask you to respond to one of the last points Ms. Murphy made about the comment in the UCC. It does suggest when you've got the forms going back and forth and someone adds interest, interest presumptively does not, I'm just paraphrasing, but does not presumptively alter the terms of the deal, and your client would have had to object. And it doesn't appear that they said anything for quite a long time about the interest rate. Why doesn't that undermine your argument here?
I think the reason it does not is that an objection was really not appropriate, since the question was whether the work was properly performed. It wasn't so. There wasn't a question of how much was to be paid. The issue that was being addressed was the amount of the bill as opposed to the interest rate that may or may not be charged. I realize that under the UCC, what you actually look at, what you're actually paying attention to is sort of a big so what, but since the focus was not there, I think that was the reason. The small print on the invoice was really not the issue, it was the amount of the invoice that was at issue.
So when do you think your client had the first chance to object?
I think that the first chance to object, as Ms. Murphy said, they filed their lien, and I think there would have been a chance at that point and at which time the lawsuit was filed. I don't think, as Ms. Murphy has suggested, that it was required to have everything put into that complaint, as that's not the nature of a complaint. You don't have to complain about every little thing that you think. You just have to complain in general, and I think that complaint was made. If there are no further questions, I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Orr.